really glad to be here with you this morning, and I will tell you why. It was exactly a year ago this Sunday that I was in the hospital and not able to be with you all, and wondering how everything would go. And so last year I didn't get to deliver the Mother's Day sermon because I was in the hospital. I am so grateful that I am not in the hospital this year, that I am able to be with you on Mother's Day and deliver the Mother's Day sermon. And I am grateful to God for his healing hand and taking care of the problem of why I was in the hospital in the first place. So, this morning, we know that it's Mother's Day, and I want to let you know that this is a Mother's Day sermon, but in a very different way than you've probably ever seen it before. We had a saying at school, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Okay? Like father, like son, like mother, like daughter, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. We know that mothers have an influence over us. And thank God we all had a mother, because that's how we are here today. So if you can't think of anything to praise God for, just praise God that you had a mother that gave you birth and that you are here today. Many different people have different experiences with mothers. Some are blessed with wonderful mothers. Some were not as lucky as others in the mother department. However, we know that God has given each one of us life. So this morning, I want us to think about stellar and sinister biblical mothers. Now, there are some stellar biblical mothers, and there are some sinister biblical mothers. And this is something you may not think about very often. So we're going to start off this morning with Hannah. Hannah was a stellar mom. She was fantastic. If you turn with me in 1 Samuel... If we look in 1 Samuel, we're going to see what happened with Hannah. Now, Hannah had been barren. She couldn't have children, and she had been greatly distressed about that because her husband's other wife at the time, was really causing a lot of problems for her, was taunting her and saying, ha ha, I can bear children and you can't. And Hannah's husband, Elkanah, he just kind of didn't get it. He goes, well, aren't I worth more to you than 10 sons? And Hannah's like, okay, so you're sort of missing the point. Yes, I love you, but having children was something, was one of her dreams. And so she goes to the temple and she prays for a child. And in 1 Samuel, we're going to look at verse 21 in the first chapter. It says, when the man Elkanah went up with all his family to offer the annual sacrifice to the Lord and to fulfill his vow, Hannah did not go, as she said. So she said to her husband, and this is after she's had Samuel, okay? So she prayed to the Lord. The Lord blessed her. She had Samuel. And so she knew that God had given her this child. Hannah did not go. She said to her husband, after the boy is weaned, I will take him and present him before the Lord, and he will live there always. Do what seems best to you, Elkanah, her husband told her. Stay here until you have weaned him. Only may the Lord make good his word. So the woman stayed at home and nursed her son until she had weaned him. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour, and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord at Shiloh. When they had slaughtered the bull, they brought the boy to Eli. And she said to him, as surely as you live, my lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. In the picture you can see an artist's rendering of Hannah bringing her son Samuel to the priest Eli. Later on in chapter 2, we look at verse 18. We can see a little bit more of what happens. It says, That's not exactly where I was looking at. Okay, yeah, verse 18. But Samuel was ministering before the Lord, a boy wearing a linen ephod. Each year his mother made him a little robe and took it to him when she went up with her husband to offer the annual sacrifice. Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife, saying, "May the Lord give you children by this woman to take the place of the one she prayed for and gave to the Lord." Then they would go home. And the Lord was gracious to Hannah. She conceived and gave birth to 3 sons and 2 daughters. Meanwhile, the boy Samuel grew up in the presence of the Lord. What I'd like for us to think about here is Hannah taught Samuel some important lessons. Even though she gave up her son, she taught him some really important lessons. What did she teach him? She taught him that God is of first importance. She realized that God had given her Samuel, and she does the ultimate sacrificial thing in dedicating Samuel back to the Lord. That is an amazing, amazing thing. Who of us would be able to give up our firstborn? Be difficult. Remember, she had prayed. She had borne Samuel with difficulty. She also taught Samuel about thoughtfulness. Thoughtfulness is important. How many of us appreciate thoughtfulness? I appreciate thoughtfulness. I know lots of people do. We appreciate when people are thoughtful to us. And we appreciate what they show. It's a way of showing their love for us. Hannah would bring a new little coat for Samuel each year when she came up to the temple to visit. She'd visit with Samuel, and she'd bring him new clothes. Okay? It's thoughtful. It was thoughtful. She didn't just say, "Well, he's the priest's problem now. They can provide for him." No, she went ahead and provided something for him. She was thoughtful towards him. She gave him a gift each year. Each one of us is thoughtful to our children. I've had the opportunity to be like a foster mom at some points in time in my life. And it is interesting because you think of the different things that a child might need or want. Things that make you think of them. Things that are important to them, or you know that will just bring them more joy than you can imagine. And sometimes it's just small stuff. Just really small stuff can bring them a lot of joy. But it's the thoughtfulness. Parents can teach their children thoughtfulness. Hannah taught Samuel thoughtfulness. She also taught him that God was of first importance because she dedicated him to the Lord. So those are some stellar things that she taught Samuel. She was a stellar mom. Now I want us to look at a sinister mom. Rebecca was a sinister mom. And okay, maybe that's a little bit harsh. But Rebecca was a sinister mom. And let's look at how. She taught her boys some not so great lessons. If we look in Genesis, the 25th chapter. In Genesis 25, we'll see what she taught her children. And Rebecca, remember, had a terrific love story. She's one of those women who had a love at first sight experience. It was an arranged marriage of sorts, but it was a love at first sight kind of story, and maybe some other time we'll go into that. But she bore 2 children, and we're going to look at that. In chapter 25, we're going to look at verse 19. It says, "This is the account of Abraham's son Isaac. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean from Padam Aram, and sister of Laban, the Aramean." So I want you to notice that he was 40 years old. Isaac was 40 years old. "Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was barren. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." When the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment, so they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his head grasping Esau with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. So how long had she been barren? If they were married at 40 and he was 60 when they had their first children, that's 20 years of barrenness. 20 years of barrenness. 20 years of no accidents, no mishaps, no problems with birth control. I mean, like, she was barren that long. And God blessed them with twins when Isaac was 60 years old. Going on, it says, the boys grew up and Esau became a skilled hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was a quiet man staying among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country, famished. He said to Jacob, "Quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished." That is why he was also called Edom. Jacob replied, "First sell me your birthright." "Look, I am about to die," Esau said. "What good is this birthright to me?" But Jacob said, "Swear to me first." So he swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. Now I want you to notice something here. A birthright meant, if you had the birthright, that meant you had special blessings, special privileges from your father. That meant you had more land inheritance. It meant you had a lot of special privileges. Do you realize what Esau just did? He's hungry, so he gives up that for a bowl of beans. How many of you, I know some of you like beans, but how many of you would give up your inheritance for a bowl of beans? I wouldn't. Esau was really hungry, but what did this teach him? He was short-sighted and impatient. I mean, he could have gone and gotten some crackers or something from the cupboard. He didn't have to sell his birthright for a bowl of lentil stew. I mean, no lentil stew is that good to give up your birthright for, okay? He was short-sighted and impatient. But what was Jacob? Jacob was cunning, wasn't he? He could have said, "Well, here, I can see you're famished, you're about to die of hunger. I'll give you a bowl of stew." No, what does he do? He goes, "Oh, what will you give me in exchange for this?" He's cunning. He's thinking, "Huh, I can be a little crafty here. I can make a deal out of this." It was an unfair deal. Birthright versus bowl of beans. Not a fair deal. Where did they learn this? How do people learn to be cunning and crafty? How do they know how to be short-sighted? When surviving, but also seeing examples of those around them. They had to have seen someone else do the same kind of cunning, crafty stuff. Or be impatient and need stuff right away. They had to learn that from somewhere. Now, my guess is, even though we look at Rebekah as a, you know, she was a good person in the Bible of sorts, She was actually kind of a sinister mom because she taught her sons some not good stuff and encouraged them in some not altogether on the level kind of behavior. If we look on in chapter 27 of Genesis, in Genesis 27, I want us to look at the first verse. It says, "When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, 'My son.' 'Here I am,' he answered. Isaac said, 'I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me to eat so that I may give you my blessing before I die.' Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, 'Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, "Bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die." Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me 2 choice young goats so that I can prepare some tasty food for your father just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father and eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies.' Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, 'But my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a man with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing.' His mother said to him, 'My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me.' So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her oldest son, which she had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed to her son Jacob the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, 'My father.' 'Yes, my son,' he answered. 'Who is it?' Jacob said to his father, 'I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you give me your blessing.' Isaac asked his son, 'How did you find it so quickly, my son?' 'The Lord your God gave me success,' he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not.' Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he blessed him. 'Are you really my son Esau?' he asked. 'I am,' he replied. Then he said, 'My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing.' Jacob brought it to him, and he ate, and he brought some of the wine, and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come here, my son, and kiss me.' So he went to him and kissed him. When Isaac caught the smell of his clothes, he blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed.' After Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He too prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, 'My father, sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing.' His father Isaac asked him, 'Who are you?' 'I am your son,' he answered, 'your firstborn Esau.' Isaac trembled violently and said, 'Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came, and I blessed him, and indeed he will be blessed.' When Esau heard this, his father's words, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, 'Bless me too, my father.' But he said, 'Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing.'" what just happened there? I don't think that there's a movie in Hollywood that has addressed this yet. Hollywood doesn't come up with anything new. All of their themes, generally, are found in this book. Just a rewriting of them. Different names, different faces, different time periods. I want you to see what's in this. There are so many things that are wrong. Just wrong. Rebecca says, pretend to be your brother. She's telling Jacob to be an imposter. Then she helps him do it by preparing the goat skins to make it seem like he's his brother Esau. What does Jacob do when he's in with his father? He lies. He says he's Esau. He says he's the firstborn. Lie, lie, liar, liar, pants on fire. He is lying. Now, where did he learn that? Well, his mother is not setting a very good example here. Okay? Now, who prepared the food? Jacob says, I prepared the food. Who do we know prepared the food? Rebecca prepared the food and the bread. Another lie. Right? She makes it seem like he smells like Esau by bringing in the laundry. Okay? Now, they must have had quite some body odor at that point in time. They hadn't had deodorant, okay, or something. Because they could tell the difference in smell between Esau and Jacob. Okay? So she brings in Esau's laundry, dresses Jacob in Esau's laundry, so that it even smells like Esau. But you know what the worst part is? When Jacob says, when Isaac says to Jacob, how did you get the game so quickly? And Jacob says, well, the Lord, he blessed me. He's lying again, and he's blaming it on God. That is like the worst. Rebecca was teaching her son some sinister kind of things to do. These are not lessons. How many of you mothers wanted to teach your children to lie? I'm glad I didn't see any hands go up. How many of you wanted to teach your kids to cheat? I'm also glad no one's hands went up. How many of you wanted to teach your children to deceive others? Again, no hands, and I'm glad. Because those are sinister traits that we don't like in the human race, that we don't want to teach to other people. What did Rebecca do? She taught her sons how to be short-sighted and impatient, cunning and devious, downright devious. She was a sinister mom. So now we looked at a good mom and a bad mom. Let's look at another stellar mom. Naomi was a stellar mother-in-law. You always marry into a family. You don't just marry your spouse. You also marry into the family. It's great to have a good mother-in-law. It's good to have a good father-in-law. You want to get along with your in-laws. Naomi was an excellent, stellar mother-in-law. If we look in the book of Ruth, and we're going to kind of just jump around in a couple of spots in the book of Ruth, because the book of Ruth is fun. You could read through it, find out what happens. There's lots of cool stuff that happens. Okay. It's getting stuck here in my Bible. We'll get there in a second. All right. Ruth is a little tiny book between Judges and 1 Samuel. In Ruth, the first chapter, we're going to look at a few verses. In verse 3, it says, now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud, and they said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me." At this they wept again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me, and the Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now, I want you to notice something here. Naomi realizes that her daughters-in-law could go on and marry. They could go back home to their father's household. They were both widows. They could go on and marry other men and have families of their own. And she's urging them to do that. She's saying, "Hey, look, you don't have to stay single and hang out with me. You can go on with your life." And one of them decides to do that. The other one says, "I want to be part of your family. Where you die, I want to die. Your God is going to be my God, and where you go, I want to go. Your people will be my people." She didn't want to go. She wanted to stay with Naomi. So Ruth stays with Naomi. In chapter 3, we're going to look at just a couple verses. One day Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for? Is not Boaz, with whose servant girls you have been, a kinsman of ours? Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying, then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." Her mother-in-law is telling her how to get another man. That's what she's doing. She's saying, "You can go on in life. In fact, I'm going to set this up a little bit. I'm going to tell you how to get this guy. I'm going to tell you how to attract him. I'm going to tell you what to do until he tells you what to do." Going on in verse 16, we know that Boaz does discover Ruth, and he talks to her, and he sends her home with a whole bunch of barley. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then she told her everything that Boaz had done for her and added, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then Naomi said, "Wait, my daughter, until you find out what happens, for the man will not rest until the matter is settled today." Naomi had a nose for romance. She knew that Boaz was already a little bit hooked, and she knew that Ruth was already a little bit hooked. They just needed a little help and permission to get it together, right? They had to go through the proper channels. They had to get there. So, finishing up with what Ruth is in chapter 4 of Ruth, we're going to look at verse 13. It says, "So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Then he went to her, and as the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The women said to Naomi, 'Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth.' Then Naomi took the child, laid him in her lap, and cared for him. The women living there said, 'Naomi has a son,' and they named him Obed, and he was the father of Jesse, the father of David." And that father of David is the father of King David. What did Naomi teach Ruth? She taught her daughter-in-law faith in God and resiliency. How to go on in life when life is giving you bad stuff. When life gives you lemons, make lemonade. She was teaching her daughter-in-law how to make lemonade. How to go on in life. Now, I want us to close a little bit out this morning with one of the worst moms ever, okay? None of us have had this bad of a mom. Queen Athaliah was the worst sinister mom. She was terrible. If you look in 2 Kings, in 2 Kings, the 8th chapter, and just so you can get a flavor of this, how many of you have heard of Queen Athaliah before? A couple of you have. I know Joyce hates this story, and it's a gruesome one. Okay, so in chapter 8, verse 25, we're going to pick up a little bit of the story so you kind of understand what's going on. In the 12th year of Joram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaziah was 22 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 1 year. His mother's name was Athaliah, a granddaughter of Omri, king of Israel. He walked in the ways of the house of Ahab. Was Ahab a good king or bad king? Bad king, right? He walked in the ways of Ahab, of the house of Ahab, and did evil in the eyes of the Lord, as the house of Ahab had done, for he was related by marriage to Ahab's family. Okay? So now you have the background story. So if you go over to chapter 11, remember, Athaliah is the mother, and we're going to look at verse 1. It says, "When Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead..." How long did he reign in Jerusalem? 1 year. He was only 22, right? "When she saw that her son was dead, she proceeded to destroy the whole royal family. But Jehosheba, the daughter of King Jehoram and sister of Ahaziah, took Joash, son of Ahaziah, and stole him away from among the royal princes, who were about to be murdered. She put him and his nurse in a bedroom to hide him from Athaliah, so he was not killed. He remained hidden with his nurse at the temple of the Lord for 6 years while Athaliah ruled the land." What just happened here? Athaliah just put her whole family to death, pretty much. Okay? She's got this one daughter who married a priest. She didn't put her to death because she had no rights to the throne. But anyone who had rights to the throne, that means all of her sons and granddaughters, she murdered them. She put them all to death. In the seventh year, Jehoiada sent for the commanders of the units of 100 of the Karaites and the guards, and had them brought to him at the temple of the Lord. He made a covenant with them and put them under oath at the temple of the Lord. Then he showed them the king's son. So the priest is showing them that one of the sons of the king is still actually living. Okay? He commanded them, saying, "This is what you are to do, you who are in three companies that are going on duty on the Sabbath. A third of you are guarding the royal palace, and a third the surgate, and a third at the gate behind the guard, who take turns guarding the temple. And you who are in the other two companies that normally go off on the Sabbath duty are all to guard the temple for the king. Station yourselves around the king, each man with his weapon in his hand. Anyone who approaches your ranks must be put to death. Stay close to the king wherever he goes." Remember, this is like a little 6 or 7 year old boy, or 7 or 8 year old boy. And he's the son of the king. So he's been hiding out with his nurse in the temple. That's how he survived not dying by not being murdered by his grandmother Athaliah. And now the priest is saying, everyone's got to guard this kid with your life. Okay? We don't want anything happening to him. We're going to skip down to verse 12. Jehoiada brought out the king's son and put the crown on him. He presented him with a copy of the covenant and proclaimed him king. They anointed him, and the people clapped their hands and shouted, "Long live the king!" When Athaliah heard the noise made by the guards and the people, she went to the people at the temple of the Lord. She looked, and there was the king standing by the pillar, as the custom was. The officers and the trumpeters were beside the king, and all the people of the land were rejoicing and blowing trumpets. Then Athaliah tore her robes and called out, "Treason! Treason!" Jehoiada the priest ordered the commanders of the units of 100 who were in charge of the troops, "Bring her out between the ranks and put to the sword anyone who follows her." For the priest had said, "She must not be put to death in the temple of the Lord." So they seized her as she reached the palace, where the horses entered the palace grounds, and there she was put to death. Jehoiada then made a covenant between the Lord and the king and the people that they would be the Lord's people. And he also made a covenant between the king and the people. And then after that, they went out to the temple of Baal and tore it down. I want you to see what's bad about this. She was a terrible example of a mother. Okay? She murdered her own children. She murdered her own children so she could be queen. That's horrible. She did that. It's awful. Terrible. Can you imagine your grandmother seeking your life, wanting to kill you? I mean, that would be terrible. It's a good thing that Joash was hidden away so that he could become a king. He could become a righteous king, one that would bring the people back to serving the Lord. Queen Athaliah was awful. I just think it's hilarious that she shouts, "Treason, treason." I mean, what on earth did she do at the very beginning of this story? Committed treason? I mean, and here she's blaming other people? It just comes around, doesn't it? It really does. Queen Athaliah was a sinister example of a mother. She was terrible. I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts. Children are a gift from the Lord. In Psalm 127:3, it says that children are a gift from the Lord and that they are a heritage of the righteous. But you know what? We have a responsibility. Responsibility to teach them well. In Deuteronomy, the 11th chapter, the Israelite people were commanded about how they should raise their children. In Deuteronomy 11, Verse 13, it says, "So if you faithfully obey the commands I am giving you today, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, then I will send rain on your land in its season, both autumn and spring rain, so that you may gather in your grain, new wine, and oil. I will provide grass in the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Be careful, or you will be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut the heavens so that it will not rain, and the ground will yield no produce, and you will soon perish from the good land the Lord is giving you. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your homes and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land that the Lord swore to give to your forefathers, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth." He says, if you follow these commands, you'll receive the blessing. How important is what we teach our children? It's very important. How important is the example we set? Very important. I can't stress to you enough how important those dinner time conversations and those rides in the car are. A lot of parenting, a lot of mentoring happens when you're riding in the car, when you're sitting around eating together. Those are the times that you get a chance to chat. Those are the times that you get to hear your child's heart. Those are the times you get to hear the problems, the joys, the questions. Don't take those moments for granted. Those are the times when you're teaching. Those times when you are doing something and your child sees how you react and respond, you're teaching them. A child that sees his parent get really upset and frustrated and violent will also respond in the same way instead of choosing a more peaceful path. If they see someone respond more calmly, they will choose to respond more calmly. Everything you do as a mom and dads too, it's setting an example and teaching your children. There are things that are not so much taught as caught, and you want your children to learn well. Mothers have the opportunity to influence their children for evil or for good. In Proverbs 22:6, it says, "Train up a child when he is young, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way he should go when he is young, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." What you learn when you're little goes with you throughout life. I learned a lot of lessons from my mom and dad. Things that I saw them do, ways that I saw them respond. Were they perfect people? No. But they did the best they could. They tried to teach us the best they could. I hope you had a similar experience. I know some of you did, some of you may not have. But we can be very grateful for the lessons that our parents teach us. Our mothers teach us lots of different things. So I want us to be grateful for our mothers, and I want you to think about it. Most of us, well, none of us had Queen Athaliah as a mother, so that's good, because we're all still here, right? So our mothers were all better than that, okay? Yes, it was in the New Testament. Penny was pointing out in the New Testament that John the Baptist was beheaded because of a mother's request to her daughter. And the mother was not the most upright person because she was trying to be another wife of the king, even though it was illegal for her to be so. So, because she was the sister-in-law of the king. And they were not supposed to get married. So that's a bad example as well, isn't it? There are some sinister moms and there are some stellar moms. We're going to close today's service with one of the mothers in our congregation with one of her favorite hymns. And after the service, I would love for each one of the mothers that are here, the mothers that are here can come up and choose one of the gifts off the table, and you can choose a tea bag to go along with the gift.